a really quick and exciting announcement to make. The Menopause and Cancer Podcast is now also on YouTube, and I'm so excited that more people now get to watch our conversations. So the link to the YouTube channel is in our show notes. Please go and subscribe to the channel so that more people who need to hear our conversations are able to find them. Thank you. Welcome to the Menopause and Cancer Podcast, where we speak with survivors, incredible menopause experts, and other experts in their fields to help us find solutions to our symptoms and ideas to improve our health. My name is Dani Binnington, and I'm very excited that the brilliant Debbie Pugh is on the podcast today. Debbie is a hypnotherapist and master coach practitioner, and she's going to talk to us how hypnotherapy can help you and why it's got nothing to do with people walking around stages pretending or behaving like chickens. Right, let's get into the nitty-gritty of what hypnotherapy can do for us today. This is an episode about healing and different modalities, and it's also an episode that touches about all of the shades of grays between what science and evidence and facts can tell us. Because unless we also talk about when is the right time to embark on treatment, what is right for you, when maybe are you best off to put a lid on your own experience just so you can get through the next stage until you're ready to maybe tap into everything and start to work on yourself and your past. It's really important to talk about that as well. And that's what we're going to do today with Debbie's help. I also have an amazing poem to share with you. It's on a dodgy piece of paper that I've always got in my little book of poems. And it really resonated with me and this conversation. So I'm going to share that with you right at the end. But for now, let's welcome Debbie onto the show. Hi, Debbie. You reached out to me and told me all about your amazing work that you do for people who have been diagnosed with cancer, who are also muddling through the menopause. Tell us, what is it that you do?
I am a hypnotherapist, and I volunteer at a local charity in Cambridge and work with people who are members of that charity to support them with their cancer journey. And some of them have had cancer and they're out the other side. Some of them are having treatment currently for cancer. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful charity. It has lots of different therapeutic offerings, and I'm one of the therapists that work there.
Mm. What charity is it, Debbie?
It's called the Cambridge Cancer Help Centre, and it's in Great Shelford in Cambridge.
Lovely. Great point of contact for anyone that might be local there. Debbie, a few weeks on the podcast, I had a lady, an integrative doctor from America, from a really prestigious cancer institute. And she spoke about hypnosis and hypnotherapy and the benefits of it. Talk us through what it is you do before we talk about the benefits. So how does it work in practice?
In practice, hypnotherapy allows someone to bypass their conscious mind and get into the subconscious. And it's a really good way of allowing somebody to have a session that is deeply relaxing and to just have the space to not be completely focused on the disease. And it helps them. So the ladies, it tends to be ladies that I work with. That's just the way it's happened at the moment. But they come with a number of different challenges. Can be sleep, can be anxiety, anything that you could think of, they'll present with. And so the work I do is to help them just take the time, relax, and listen to my suggestions that I'll make based on whatever the thing is that they're presenting with.
And is there a difference between hypnotherapy and hypnosis?
It's the same thing. It's just same different thing. Words. Yes.
So if anyone goes and does a bit of research after our conversation, same thing. Okay, cool. And you know, when you remember people like magicians, like Uri Geller or other magicians, and they hypnotize people, and there are thousands of people in an audience, and people suddenly turn into chickens on stage, right? And they go, you know, all a bit mad. Is it like that? Is that true? Is that real? Or is that a show?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for what happens in those shows. I've never been to one of those shows. As a hypnotherapist, it does upset me slightly that is the experience that many people will have of hypnotherapy. So what I would say is when I was doing my training, we did talk about that. And my understanding is that people are filtered, if you like, to see whether they're highly susceptible to being hypnotized, because not everybody can be hypnotized. And also whether they are the sort of person who doesn't really have a problem with going up on a stage and behaving in whatever way that the hypnotherapist decides they're going to behave. You know, for those of us that want to use hypnotherapy in a way that is therapeutic and supporting people, it's quite challenging to see it used in this kind of jokey way. I've never made anyone, cluck like a chicken. It's just pointless. I don't see it as entertainment. And I would just say that in my view, people must be incredibly willing to engage in that kind of act, because when people are in hypnosis, you can wake up at any point. You're not in a comatose state. Someone doesn't have complete control of your mind. You are at any point able, it'll be as though, you know, you could be in hypnosis and someone could knock at your door and you can wake up and go and answer the door. So you're not in this state where you are not aware of what is happening.
But you just said, Debbie, that not everyone can be hypnotized. So that does that mean that hypnosis doesn't work for everyone? Or what does that mean? Now, time for a quick message to thank our partner for this episode, M-Powder. How many of you can relate to how confusing it is when you want to support yourself with perhaps herbal supplements, but you have no idea where to start, what supplement can help with what symptom, and when you have to worry about possible contraindications? Because let's face it, once you've had a cancer diagnosis, nothing is quite so straightforward anymore, is it? I know from myself that I was really confused for a long time as to what could help, but I was very lucky that I started to work with a medical herbalist, but I also know not everyone has access to one of those. And so the fab team from M-Powder came onto an episode with me a couple of weeks back, and they explained the benefits of some of the herbal supplements, but also possible contraindications and who is perhaps affected and when there are contraindications to look out for. So go check out that episode. This is a great starting point for you to do your research, and then also go out and check out their whole food supplements, as they can be so helpful for some people. I, for example, really like the Gut Instinct product. I eat a lot of probiotics. I love sauerkraut. I love kimchi. I love kefir. And I have done for many, many years. I also eat lots of beans and lentils. And so bloating every now and then is actually an issue for me. And the Gut Instinct really helps me with that. But I know from many women in our community who really like the mood food supplement, for example. Although the packet says it can help with brain fog and sleep, many of the women in our community say it really also helps with joint ache, for example. There are contraindications with one of the ingredients if you're on tamoxifen, for example. So go back to the episode, check out the show notes, do your research, because we've added loads of great research articles as well, and we're quoting all of the data there is. I really, really hope this is super helpful for you. We want it to be practical. We want it to be action-packed, and I really want to empower you that there are solutions out there for you that you can try. So go to mpowder.store, check out all of the fantastic products, and go and listen to the episode for your research.
It means that for some people, they will not be able to get to the level of trance that's required to access the unconscious mind. And, you know, as in, some people will go to another kind of talking therapy and that might not work for them. It just depends. We're all unique. And for some people, you know, there will be resistance to hypnosis based on what you've just said, the idea perhaps that someone is going to come and control their mind. So they will find it difficult to relax, and you, if you're not relaxed, you know, you're going to have adrenaline pumping through your system, and that's just not going to help you get into the state that's required for you to, you know, lay back and, well, you don't have to be laying, you can be sitting, but just to kind of just relax into it. It is a very relaxing process. But yes, not everyone can be hypnotized, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. And so hypnosis, I know, doesn't just last whilst you don't just benefit from the relaxation that you, for example, talk about whilst you're going through the therapy session. It lasts beyond that. How is that possible?
It's because when you're working with a client, you make suggestions to them and you're planting this idea in someone's unconscious mind. So if, for example, some of the work I do might be around ego strengthening, and you're just planting the idea that someone is very capable and can go and do the things that they want to do, and you will repeat that for them. And you don't just, someone just doesn't just come into your session and you like immediately, you know, sit them in a chair and do hypnosis on them. You have a, you know, a detailed conversation with them first, and you find out a bit about them, you know, something about the presenting problem that they may have. And when you do your suggestion work with them, it's based on that. So you weave in the things that you know will work for them, and you repeat and you repeat. And often I will record something for my clients so that they can then take it away and listen to that over and over again. And it's just something that's sat there in the unconscious mind. Hopefully the unconscious mind will accept the suggestions and will then, you know, have them available unconsciously. Mm. And hopefully the person will then get the benefit.
Mm. So because of the nature of the people you see at the charity, there must be an awful lot of people who come to you and say, I'm really worried my cancer might come back. That fear of recurrence, it's not just getting through active cancer treatment, that often lingers with us for years to come. Is this something where hypnosis could help?
Absolutely, because we can help people with stress and anxiety. One of the things I'd like to sort of stress is that hypnosis is a complementary therapy to something like counselling. So in hypnotherapy, yes, we're having conversations with the person regarding the presenting problem. So if they're feeling stressed and anxious, then that's what we will work with them on. In my case, I can't speak for all hypnotherapists, but I will certainly, whatever the presenting problem is, will help them with the stress and anxiety. But if they have something like trauma or, you know, other presenting challenges, I might refer them on to someone who is a specialist in that area to support them. And so it complements other therapies as well. But certainly with the people I work with, the things that present are stress, anxiety, often with managing not only their own emotions, but especially if they have families and children there, quite often in a position where they feel they must manage the emotions of other people around them, which can just add to the, you know, their load that they're already bearing at that point. So yes, it's people come in with all sorts of different things, and often there may be things that present that are from way from back in the past, things that they thought perhaps they'd dealt with, and suddenly finding themselves in this current situation, it reactivates something from the past, and they'll often not realise that this other thing is, you know, presenting itself again. So as I said earlier, I will then often refer them onto another specialist. So, you know, if they've had grief in the past, for example, suddenly it might come back, or something in their treatment might remind them of a situation with someone from their past who may have also had cancer. They may have lost a parent or, you know, some other family member to cancer. So all of that stuff can then come up again in the session. So yes, I will refer them to someone that perhaps specialises in grief or trauma to help them manage that side of things.
Mm. And I think that's such a valid point, because when that happens, you often don't know it's something from the past. You just think, now I've had a cancer diagnosis, I've had really difficult treatments to endure, my body, my mind has gone through so much, I'm feeling X, Y, and Z because of all of this. It's very difficult when you're in it to know that actually some of the triggers might have been from a decade ago, or might be even to do with your childhood or anything else that has happened to you. And it takes an expert like you to help unpick that, doesn't it?
It does, yes. And it's very interesting, some of the things that come up. one of the things that I find quite fascinating is when people feel that they don't have it as bad as someone else. So they may have had a cancer diagnosis, which has meant perhaps they require surgery, for example, not chemotherapy, not radiotherapy. And there's a sense of, well, I got off lightly then compared to other people. Almost a sense of they invalidate their own emotions around dealing with the situation that they find themselves in. And so that's always very interesting to observe, that someone is comparing themselves to other people who have experienced cancer and minimising their emotions around it, or trying to suppress them. So again, it's helping someone see that it's absolutely valid. It's not a competition. You're allowed to feel, you know, worried or sad about your situation just because someone else may be having to have more extensive treatment. It doesn't mean that your situation isn't difficult for you to manage. So I think that's interesting. I've experienced that a few times as well.
And it's very interesting, Debbie, every workshop that I run with people in person, and just recently, a couple of Mondays ago, we ran a workshop at Future Dreams House, which is a breast cancer charity in London. And there were about 10 of us or 15 of us around the table. And two women said exactly that. They said, I almost don't want to say too much. You know, I haven't had it so bad. I haven't had chemotherapy. The other ladies in the room did. And these two really found it hard to even say that. But they felt almost like their story wasn't as valid because they didn't have that part of the treatment. And it was great that there were two of them in there, because at least they felt someone else is thinking the same.
I don't know. I think that's, you know, again, that can speak to something about that person and how they've been conditioned to respond to tough situations in their life. You know, just, you know, that very British thing of, you know, just crack on, just get on with it and stiff upper lip and, you know, box that off, compartmentalise that and put that over there. And I think certainly within that space that you hold as a hypnotherapist and as any kind of therapist, you know, it's almost like you have to remind them to give themselves permission to be upset, to be sad, to be worried, to be concerned. It's all absolutely fine. It's all valid. So that surprised me, actually, as a hypnotherapist, to have people coming in and feeling like that, because, you know, it's just astonishing that someone would actually be minimising the impact, feeling that they don't deserve their own attention almost.
And there will always be someone else who's better off, and there will always be someone else who's worse off than us, isn't it? Because you might as well compare yourself to someone who is very old and's never had an ailment in their life. And in comparison to them, you've had a really, really bad experience. And of course, there are so many people who are less lucky, less fortunate, and where their journeys are much more difficult, isn't it? And it doesn't matter which way you look, there'll always be someone on either end of the spectrum. So you are right. It's pointless to do so, but it's also so human, because every workshop I go to, we have people that feel that. And so thank you for bringing that up, Debbie. I think it's a really, really good example. I think there was a time when my own therapist or counselor, we did lots of different things from CBT to talking therapy. She says, psychoanalyst as well. And at one point she said, I think maybe hypnotherapy would be helpful for you. And so I embarked on that. I was telling all of our listeners a few weeks ago on the podcast what that experience felt like after the session, but I didn't go into what happened during the session. And in these particular sessions that I embarked on, my hypnotherapist took me back through all of the main negative emotions I had experienced as a person way before cancer even. And so I can't remember fully which ones there were, but there were things like guilt, fear, what are the others? Anger, sadness. Yeah, so he talked about 7, I think, really big negative emotions that we experience. And he took me back in my old self to the times where I really felt a very strong negative emotion, say about guilt. And for me, often these situations were in my childhood, Debbie. And so for years, I kept trying to fix my post-cancer emotions, my fear of recurrence, my fear of not being alive to see my children start school. And when we went and embarked on this work, hardly any of it had to do with my cancer diagnosis itself. And it was deep-rooted fears, jealousy, anger, all of the feelings we've just mentioned, from when I was a child to a young adult. And it was incredible to go on that journey with a hypnotherapist that I felt very safe with.
Yeah, it's astonishing what we bring into adulthood, all these strategies that we put in place when we're children that help us navigate whatever is going on for us at the time. We bring them into adulthood and we keep using them, even though they're not necessarily appropriate for us anymore. But we don't see that until someone like your hypnotherapist, sounds like they dealt with that really well for you. It isn't until you kind of give yourself the opportunity to pause or put yourself in the hands of someone you trust, an expert that you trust, that you can go back and understand that all of those things you used in childhood, you don't need them right now. You can have a different approach. So I'm so glad that your therapist helped you to see that.
And it was really interesting because that was quite a few years since my initial diagnosis, and I felt I was doing so well physically and I was eating so well and I was, you know, became a yoga teacher and I had this picture of health, like my Instagram feed looked really lovely then. I put a lot of like attention into making it look healthy and all of my recipes and my running trainers and all of that. But internally, I wasn't feeling it. I felt so disconnected from the picture I wanted the world. I was almost like wanting to fake it until I make it, but I wasn't feeling it. You know, there was still that disconnect. And it wasn't until I sort of looked back over some other things that have happened to me that was obviously now sort of amplified during and since my cancer diagnosis. It's almost like it was amplified and a magnifying glass was looking over everything else that's happened. In our family, for example, we lost every single female family member on my dad's side of the family to ovarian cancer. One of my aunties, when she passed, she had two teenage daughters. Of course, that's really going to worry me as a young mum, then having cancer myself. And so there are so many other things that add, the layer of trauma just gets added and added, doesn't it?
100%. And it's really interesting hearing you talk about your fake it till you make it, all the things you were putting on Instagram. The thing is we're never finished. So when we deal with, we put something in place, you address something, and then all you do then is you're just creating space for them for the next thing that wants your attention will materialize. And that's certainly one of the things that I've learned over the years, because, you know, I've had therapy myself, not for cancer. I haven't had cancer. My son had cancer when he was 12 years old. And you just think, all right, I've dealt with that now. That's a little tick in the box. And then suddenly something else comes up and you're, oh no, I thought I was fixed. But of course, life happens, you know, things happen in our current life and challenges are there all of the time. So we're constantly being presented with situations where, you know, we have to use our inner resources. And sometimes something that we'd completely forgotten about in the past will just suddenly, you know, start vibrating away in the back of your head and you're right, okay, there's something here, and it's just giving yourself the space and the time to explore what that might be.
And I think as an exploration for anyone at home listening to this, because I think a lot of people think I'm feeling like that because of my cancer diagnosis, it's really, really helpful to start maybe just this weekend thinking, it's all of us, isn't it? It's our whole life and all of our life experiences that are muddling their way into sort of our experience now. And whether we can all go on a journey to try and think, actually, is some deep-rooted maybe fear or guilt or anger or shame coming from somewhere else and it's now amplifying? And is there someone who can help me unpick it? I know access is difficult for hypnotherapy. So I know you work and give your time to this brilliant charity. Do you think many charities offer hypnotherapy?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm just fortunate that I came across this this charity. This was my deal with God, actually, when my son was being treated at Addenbrooke's Hospital. And I know we can't influence it, but kind of, you know, for me, it was my deal with God was if you know, my son has a good prognosis and gets through his treatment, I promise I will do something to support people with cancer. And I do think it's difficult to get access, not just to hypnotherapy, but to any therapy. So if you can find something like Maggie's, for example, I'm sure you know all about their work. I'm not sure how much support they give. I think there's a finite amount of time, but they can at least provide some support and then signpost to other things that are available. But yeah, like all of these things at the moment, it's challenging for people to get access.
Yeah, we have a group of volunteers working with us at the moment, and we're compiling the UK's only database of cancer charities everywhere. And so hopefully when that is done, we can share it with everyone and people can then find the access and the help wherever they are. If you're in Wolverhampton, if you're in a tiny village in Wales somewhere, for example, we really want people to reach out to local communities and see how we can connect organizations with people more and people with organizations. So that's our little dream. We're plugging away. If anyone is listening to this and you've got a few spare hours, actually, come and help us. We're not quite finished. We've got a few counties to go. Email us. Debbie, how do you support, or how did you support yourself when your son was diagnosed? We are talking a lot about how do we support ourselves as cancer survivors, but I've been on both ends of, I've been living with people we've lost, you know, dear people we've lost to cancer, very close people to me, and I've been diagnosed myself. And I can honestly say the being diagnosed myself hasn't been worse for myself than losing someone, a loved one, to cancer. How did you support yourself?
Well, in the beginning, with red wine, to be honest. That was my, you know, the first sort of few weeks after diagnosis. I was really fortunate. We were really fortunate. Me and my husband were able to support each other. There was Addenbrooke's Hospital has a phenomenal setup for paediatric oncology. It's a centre of excellence. So in terms of access to various different support groups, there is a charity. It isn't called Click Sergeant anymore, but I can't remember what it changed its name to, but it did. But they were available to support, and there were access to other services as well. So I didn't use those talking therapies because, in all honesty, at the time, and this is, you know, I am a hypnotherapist, so it might sound counterintuitive, but I felt at the time that if I did start to talk about it, I would unravel. So I felt like I needed to get him through his year of chemotherapy that he had. And then I was also very fortunate to have some very good friends who had also had either direct experience of cancer themselves. A friend had it at a very young age. So, you know, there were people around me, friends around me, and I tended to use them rather than go to any professional services. But I found in more recent years that it did need to be spoken about with professionals. And so, you know, I had counselling to help me do that and share my emotions around that. So yeah, I used services myself to help me on my journey and unpack that box that didn't ever want to be you know, I didn't actually want to look at it, but I felt that if I didn't, it would just be festering away in the background.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's so refreshing? You are a therapist, and for you to say at this particular time talking therapy wasn't right for me. And I think that's so important, because we talk about all these modalities on the podcast a lot. Whatever it is that we we do. And healing is so weird, isn't it? It's not linear. It goes up and down. And it's like, it's just a roller coaster, really. The emotions are being spat out. We have to deal with them. And then things sort of are the wrong way around sometimes. In my own healing, it felt like it was all a bit like the wrong way around. and it's so important.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is, like, from my own experience, it was, I had other children, so really important to focus on them. And it just felt like, for the sake of my child who was going through all of this, you know, that fake it till you make it thing, you know, being very focused, being very strong, it was a situation where you could only focus on today. It was literally living life. It's sometimes minute by minute. There was no point in trying to project forward because everything was unknown. Didn't have time to look backwards. It was just all about, right, we're on this journey. We can only be present, because it was important to be present for my son's sake and to give him the confidence that everything was going to be okay, and that, you know, we were on this journey together, and to be that support that he needed. So it was almost like at that time there wasn't really room for me to think about how I felt, because it had to be about him and it had to be about our other children. So that's why I didn't deal with it at the time, and somehow muddled through, as we all do.
And how is your son now, Debbie?
My son is now 23 and is currently working in Mauritius. So he's done very well. He had a very rare kind of, childhood cancer, thankfully, is very rare anyway, but he had a particularly rare type of cancer with a 10-year kind of follow-up. So we've had to live with it for 10 years, you know, and I'm sure everyone who has cancer or has had cancer, when you're constantly going for those checks, there's the anxiety around the checks as well. So it's that, you know, that constant management of emotion. But he is doing brilliantly now, thank goodness.
Thank you for sharing that. I think what's so refreshing is that at different times, we have different strategies. And sometimes just getting through the day and to the end of the day is all we've got in us. And if we manage to be a bit present, that's amazing, right? If our thoughts don't always rush into the future and worst case scenario, if we can somehow go on a mindful walk or just firefight like you did, that's great. And if we allow ourselves to change strategy and then maybe turn up to hypnotherapy or counseling or something else at another point, then we're doing ourselves so much justice, aren't we? Then it's like, okay, this is what I need today. This is what I can handle, what I can cope with. Because you don't want to embark on something and then fall apart either.
And that's why I think you have to be quite mindful of what you choose to do and when you choose to do it. Because, you know, when you go through therapy, you are opening things up. A good therapist will contain it in the session. However, you go away and you reflect, and sometimes the reflection is challenging. So it has to be when it's the right time for you. And if you feel like it's not the right time for you, then that is absolutely fine. And if you feel like you want to leave it in a box, that is absolutely fine too. You have to do what works for you, and give yourself permission to be okay with that.
Yeah, thank you for that. And Debbie, when people come to you and they're receptive to hypnotherapy, what benefits do you see? What do people come back to you, and what do they say they've experienced? Hey, thank you for listening so far. This podcast has an amazing Facebook community full of inspiring women supporting each other and sharing their stories. Please come and be part of it. We'd love to have you in the group. Click the link in the show notes and come in now.
They say that it's helped. They say that one thing in particular that seems to be affected is sleep. And I know from the work that I do that sleep, people can benefit from hypnotherapy to help them get better sleep. And I think that the thing that I've experienced when I'm working with the people that I've worked with is helping them go back to that child, to go back to the past, to understand that the things that they think have been dealt with are actually asking to be looked at again. And so even acknowledging that for them is very beneficial. It's what I found is, yes, I will refer them on to a specialist, but even for them to have, it's almost like, oh, of course, this makes sense. This helps me see how I'm currently coping and what might be driving these present feelings around, you know, around this situation. So I think that it's not just the hypnosis that helps. It's the consultation that you have as part of the conversation. Because when someone walks in and says, I need hypnotherapy, they might need hypnotherapy, but they might need something else. And so when you have that conversation, you're helping them see, is this the right way for me? Or is there something else that perhaps I need to do alongside this or instead of this? And I think sometimes it's just the relief to speak to an objective person, because it's difficult to talk to people who care about you so much. Because, you know, if you're sitting there saying something that threatens them in some way emotionally, that, you know, they're carrying all this worry, this is where talking therapies can be so powerful. It's the space, the objective space for you to say whatever you want to say without fear of judgment. If you want to sit there and cry for an hour, that's perfectly fine as well. It's just having that space. And the benefit of hypnotherapy is the suggestions are planted and they just keep on working away in your unconscious mind to support you on your journey. And also, you know, as you make progress, then you tweak the suggestions, you know, or if something perhaps needs a bit more attention than something else, you tweak the suggestions. So it's a constant, you know, review of how the person is feeling and what they might need next.
Thank you for that, Debbie. And I wonder, you know, a lot of people listen to our conversations when they're out walking, when they're doing the dishes or when they're folding their laundry and they're doing jobs at home. And I wonder if we just allowed ourselves like a minute space now and we could say anything that we wanted to say without being judged, without a loved one having to carry our burden or our fear. What is it that we just needed to get off our chest? What is it that we're really, truly thinking, feeling? That alone is so liberating. Just to say out your fears, to speak out your worries, or what you're really pissed off about, or what you're, you know, even the positive things. What is it that you would say to someone in a really safe space? And maybe we can practice that for a couple of days and a couple of moments, because it's so powerful, isn't it?
It completely is. And I think the thing is I've used the word permission a lot in this conversation. And it is about giving yourself permission to acknowledge how you are feeling, whether that's, I'm actually feeling great, or I am really worried about something. And sometimes, especially when it's a fear-based emotion, that can be quite tough to face into that. But even just saying it out loud, somehow, the magic of words, the spoken word, and if you can't bear to say it, you can write it. Journaling is also incredibly powerful, a lovely way of taking a very busy mind that might be frantically, you know, I sometimes think of it as like fireworks going off in your head where you've got thought after thought after thought. You know, if you journal your feelings, that is a beautiful way of slowing yourself down because you cannot write as quickly as you can think. So, you know, just like a dump of how you're feeling, and no one ever needs to see that. You know, burn it if you don't want to see it. It's just for you. But it's just that way of allowing yourself to notice how you truly feel about something. It's a gift you can give yourself, even in, you know, trying circumstances, just to acknowledge instead of ploughing forward and managing everybody else. How am I feeling? How is this affecting me? And whatever you feel is absolutely valid. It's all fine. It's all allowed.
And whether you say it out aloud or you write it down, it's out. It's out of you, isn't it? And it's so good to get it out, be from that layer of skin and all of our thoughts, emotions and physical things that are underneath it. It's so good to get it out. And it's also so good to notice where those emotions sit in the body, because we have our feelings, don't we? We have the fear sits for people in chest or in their bellies or anxiety. I mean, I get a really funny tummy and I always need the toilet when I'm really highly anxious. People might feel butterflies in their chest. But those are just feelings, aren't they? And it's so good to acknowledge them as well, because we have physical feelings connected to our emotional feelings. And as soon as you write them, they're released in the body somehow. It doesn't make any sense when I say it, but it works for me. As soon as I speak it out aloud or acknowledge it or journal it, I'm like, okay, I can feel it in my tummy. I can feel my bowels moving. but I also know it's going to change, ease off, and I will get through this. And it's sort of that knowledge now that I can have all of this and all of these anxieties and they will ease off again. And that's been a really lovely learning for me from coming out of years of always feeling highly anxious, I think.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because, you know, you sometimes forget that emotion ebbs and flows. It does. Mm-hmm. Behaviour is generally inconsistent, you know. Nothing is a straight line. You're always going to go up and down, and life is always going to throw stuff at you. And just being able to acknowledge whatever is happening for you right now is actually a really, really powerful thing that you can do for yourself. And I don't know what it is either. I don't know what the magic is, but it's this catharsis of just, yeah, you know what? I do feel like this. I'm owning it. I feel like this, because sometimes you get your head, if you get in your head too much and you stay in your head will always want to apply logic to the situation, logic away your emotions. Oh, yes, I feel like this because, and then it's, you don't allow yourself to feel because you've explained it up here. I mean, I'm a genius at intellectualizing about my emotions, for sure. And you want to get out of your head and you want to get into your body and just let it flow. It will come out of you. And one of the things I do in hypnosis, actually, is give people anchors. So anchoring a feeling of calm if you are feeling anxious, and throwing away difficult thoughts, bringing them into a part of your body, and sort of tend to locate it in someone's shoulder so that they can then bring it down through their arm, hold it tightly in their hand, and then just let go of whatever that thing is, and then anchoring a lovely feeling, whatever the client chooses, on another hand. So, you know, there are things you can do through hypnosis, but just being out of your head and in your body.
So lovely. You know what, Debbie, what you just said is so interesting, that behavior is inconsistent. And I'm really learning the hard way at the moment. I've got three teenage daughters in the house, and blimmin' hell, their behavior is inconsistent. They either love me one moment and they're the loveliest kids, or their behavior is so erratic and they're all just mental. Their emotions are crazy, and we have shouting and all sorts of things going on. And I'm really learning how inconsistent behavior is. And of course, we then learn to be more consistent again as adults, don't we? But as soon as late becomes challenging, the inconsistent behavior, I think, really rears its ugly head again. And I myself are going through, you know, one moment crying to the next moment being happy and so grateful, and then 5 minutes later, like, really shitting myself. Oh my God, is this it? And it's like the inconsistency is back. I'm like this inconsistent teenager again. Gosh, you've really hit the nail on the head there. Well, it was so lovely to talk to you, Debbie. Thank you for reaching out. I'm so glad we connected. I wonder if you can do some recorded hypnosis sessions for our audience one day. Let's plan. I think your voice is amazing. I hope maybe we can share some of what you have to give to people when they walk into your cancer charity in Cambridge in person, whether we can sort of amplify that and reach the hundreds and thousands of people that have listened to the podcast one day and we can get a bit of your magic, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that though. I can record something and, you know, just if it's stress and anxiety, whatever we think is the right thing to do, I'm more than happy to do that.
I love it. Thank you, Debbie. Really great to chat. And thank you for your time and expertise and your warmth and knowledge and your compassion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This has been such a healing and so important conversation for me, because we can talk about all of the healing modalities that can help us until the cows come home, from hormonal medications to non-hormonal options to complementary therapies to lifestyle to hypnotherapy, whatever it is. But unless we also talk about all of the thousands of shades of grey in between those conversations and in between what science, facts and evidence tell us, I think we're missing a trick. Because it is so important as to when is something relevant for you. Who are you and what treatment modality will work for you isn't just governed by facts and science and evidence alone. It's very much about you, your genetic makeup and the world you live in. We also need to talk when it's important to keep a lid on. Maybe sometimes, like Debbie says, it's important to just get through the day and hold it all together. And when you're ready, you can start to unpick and unpack and work on things. And so there was so much wisdom in this episode, and I really connected to what Debbie was saying on many, many different levels. I want to finish today's recording with a bit of a poem, a breathing exercise, because I feel we have this valuable, treasured time together, and then we're spat out into the busyness of our lives and into the world. And I want to just close our women's circle somehow for us. Breathing out, I feel my body softening, surrendering, and engaging with the earth beneath me. Supported, energized, I feel my body spreading roots deep down into the earth, nourishing every part of me, feeding the spirit and replenishing all that is thirsty. Breathing in, I feel the inner landscape of the body opening out. Abundant, fertile, earthy and moist, a place to plant seeds, a heartfelt wish, a place to nurture, harvest wholesome food for the body, vital and yet still. Breathing in and breathing out to end this podcast recording together. Lovely words by Bluebell Woods, and I'm grateful I can share them with you today.